Radio Reverb.
I probed into its mysteries. Every clue told me a different story. Radio Reverb.
Welcome to the UK's only radio show about HIV and living a healthy life. It's the HIV Hour on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. Sue, Carl, Stuart and myself will keep you up to date regarding all the news with coronavirus and HIV, plus any other interesting stories, and of course great music. These are challenging times and we all need to feel connected and supported as much as possible. And we hope we can deliver that to you, our listeners. If you want to contact us, please do, at the usual way, hivhour@gmail.com, and Twitter and Instagram at @hiv_hour. I'm glad you're listening, and glad we're broadcasting.
Hello, Sue, how are you?
I'm very well. Yes, how are you, Josh, in these lockdown situations?
I'm all right. I have good days and bad days, Sue. How about you?
Same here, and I think everyone perhaps listening thinking, yeah, good days and bad days. And probably many of our listeners are thinking, when the hell is it going to end?
Absolutely. Don't you think that? I keep thinking that.
Oh, I know.
I'm torn. It's an area up.
Oh, dear.
So, well, I mean, do you know, saying that, I live on my own, so I think you do as well, don't you?
Yes, I do, yeah.
Cats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, I've looked at it as a bit of a retreat, and
yes.
you can't go drinking, so.
No.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's brought up some stuff for me, but
yeah.
I'm working on it.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Is that same for you?
No, definitely. I think it's the longest time I've had time on my own, and I think a lot of the listeners are probably thinking that as well, due to the circumstances. And I think, for me personally, it's been a time for reflection, because we're spending so much time on our own. It's been a time for some sort of reflection and about things, and perhaps when we eventually get back to normal, So, it's been
interesting. Don't know how long that'll be.
It's going to be a long,
slow process, I think, isn't it?
I don't think it's going to be immediate. It's going to be, perhaps a start in a few weeks, but, yeah, it'll be interesting, won't it?
So we've got some good stories this week. It's a bit different, isn't it? We're Zooming at the moment.
We're Zooming, everybody. Forgive a little bit of the breakup, but we're trying our hardest, don't we, Josh, to try and deliver the HIV Hour in the best possible way.
The best possible taste.
In the best possible way and taste for everybody, And the thing is that you would agree, Josh, we're trying to also keep up that personal perspective of, with our listeners, with our chat and our laughters and our stories and our serious stories as well. Let everyone out there to know, we're still here for everybody. We're still within the community. We're doing our best to get those stories out to everybody and to get, the listeners still connecting with the HIV Hour. So,
yeah. And things like this still go on, don't they? And there's new stories with HIV, even though this COVID going on.
Yeah,
still
absolutely.
Have to
bring
those to the front.
I know.
So what's your first story then, Sue?
Well, I don't know whether you're aware, Josh, but there's a man called, let me just get his name right. His name is Philip Normal. He lives in London, and he is one of the first mayors in the country to be living with HIV.
Wow.
And it's quite a nice little story. This story actually comes from Pink News.
Okay.
And so, it says the UK's first ever openly HIV positive mayor. Now, he's from Lambeth, South London. Do you know where that is, Josh? Yeah.
South London.
South London, yeah. he goes on to say he's been, behave yourself. He goes on to say he's been positive, Josh, for 10 years. Yeah. And he's an artist, and he has a shop in Brixton Village Market.
Oh, wow.
Interesting, yeah. And
what kind of shop is it?
Well, it's all to do with art things. Yes, yes. So yeah. Basically, he has entered into Lambeth's Oval Ward since May 2018 in local government elections. So he's not new to sort of politics, as one would say. But one of his pledges, Josh, which is really, really nice, he wants to make sure and let everybody know that it doesn't matter what status you are, you can achieve your dreams, ambitions and goals. And he's certainly doing that, being the first mayor in the UK living with HIV. And one of his pledges in the role that he's just taken on is to help the young LGBT plus community people with housing issues, life skills and emergency accommodations. So with specialist support. So he's got a really great mission ahead of him and what he wants to do. So I thought it was a really nice little story, actually.
It's a good story to hear, isn't it?
And because we need uplifting, don't we, Josh?
Absolutely, in every single way.
In every single way, absolutely, yes.
Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. I'm here with Sue. We're Zooming.
We're trying.
Yeah. So I've got a story actually. So it's from the US of A.
US of A.
It's about a former police officer in Louisiana who's getting a $90,000 settlement. He was denied a job as a deputy sheriff, because he revealed that he was HIV positive. So his name's Liam Pierce. He applied for the job, and it was with the Iberia Parish Sheriff's Office in New Iberia, which in Louisiana, which that's down south, isn't it?
I think. Yeah. Uh huh.
And that was in 2012. He had legal representation from Lambda Legal, and they're a civil rights organisation, and they focus on LGBT plus. Community and people living with HIV and AIDS. Pierce had worked as a paramedic, volunteer firefighter, and police officer. But he had moved to Louisiana in 2005 to help the hurricane with Hurricane Katrina. Yeah, that was 2005. That's a long time
ago. Yes, I know. Seems ages ago, doesn't it?
Time flies, isn't it? Yeah. So he had his interview with the for the sheriff's deputy job. Pierce was told that he would be hired. However, following his medical exam, in which it was revealed that he was HIV positive, the sheriff's office retracted the job offer.
Oh God.
So they filed the discrimination lawsuit on Pierce's behalf in 2017, and it was a long battle.
I can imagine.
Probably takes a long time, doesn't it, these things? But he finally got a settlement of $90,000.
Dollars.
So
just thinking,
these things keep coming up, don't they?
I'm just thinking what you must have gone through. Okay, you got $90,000. Okay, well, that'll be a nice little nest egg. But sometimes you can't put a price on those feelings and emotions. Would you say not, Josh? You know, being absolutely felt that you were worthless. I mean, look at the things that he's done.
Yeah.
Look at the jobs: volunteer firefighter. Yeah. Paramedic, he was there, you know, helping with Hurricane Katrina. So he's a, you know, seems to be a well thought of personality person. And he was still made to feel as though he wasn't worthless because of his HIV status.
Yeah.
Horrendous. It's not nice. Shame on them.
It's not nice, is it?
No, it's not. And go through that mental process.
No, it's not good.
Going through that mental process as well, you know, of not being felt that you weren't worth it, you know. So,
Well, as you say, just because you get a settlement doesn't mean that that everything's rosy.
No,
it's the psychological,
no.
And it's the emotional,
yeah.
and as you mm-hmm. say, feeling worthless like that.
Yeah.
It's hard. The mm-hmm. he said that the settlement. Who said this? It's the someone's HIV status is absolutely irrelevant to their ability to safely perform a job.
Yeah.
So that's what they say. And using it to deny employment or promotion is discrimination, pure and simple. So that's what they're saying on the legal team.
Uh-huh.
And the settlement should also serve as a wake-up call to states and cities, so that's across
yes.
America, obviously, to remove once and for all outdated and stigmatizing HIV criminalization laws
Absolutely.
That perpetuate discrimination and ignore current medical science. So, yeah, we keep getting these stories up, don't we, Sue?
We do. They keep coming up, don't they? But
yeah.
I suppose in one respect, Josh, you know, hopefully it's going to make other people think twice on another occasion
yeah.
because that's what we're wanting, you know. And I'm sure he didn't sort of go through that without thought. You know, there
yeah.
was a massive thought of putting himself through that. And I'm sure he was perhaps thinking of other people in the future that, you know, wanted to do a dream job and then getting turned away because of HIV.
Well, that's what he said, actually. He says, I immediately knew that the sheriff's decision to hire him was based on his HIV status. And though it was a long journey for him, it feels good to finally be vindicated. And he hopes that this case helps others avoid going through his experience and demonstrates to other employers that living with HIV has nothing to do with his ability to do his job.
Sure.
So, yeah, so it's...
No, good luck to him. Good luck to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck to him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we have another ditty?
Oh, should we have another song?
Yes.
a cheery one, Josh, a cheery one.
Radio Reverb.
Hi, if you've just tuned in, this is the HIV Hour on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area, .com online. And as you know, myself, Josh, Carl and Stuart, we're going to endeavour to bring you the HIV Hour show every single week. We're doing things a bit different. As you can tell, we're doing a bit of Zooming, we're doing a bit of recording, but we're still trying to connect with our listeners, letting everybody know we're still here for you. We're trying to get the stories from around the world. Yes, we're going to be talking about COVID-19, but we're also going to be talking about all the other great stories we've spoken about in the past on the HIV Hour. So we have a fantastic story today, and this story comes from Kenya in the newspaper called blacknews.com. Now, it's about a lady. She's about nearly 28 years of age. She was diagnosed with HIV in Kenya at the age of 8. Her doctors and her parents told her that she would probably not live past her 12th birthday. Can you imagine that? You know, as a child, being diagnosed with HIV, that's bad enough, isn't it? But then getting told you probably reach your 12th birthday and probably that will be it. Now, as I'm talking about this story, I'm looking at this amazing, lovely lady. She's an amazing advocate in Kenya, standing up for women's rights, standing up for discrimination with HIV and encouraging testing. So she's gone on to be an amazing HIV positive activist. Now, going back, she was 8 years of age when she got diagnosed with HIV. Now, what she wanted to do was to commemorate the 20 years she's actually been living with HIV. And she has got a YouTube channel. She does a lot of Twittering. I'm sure if you put her name in, let me just make sure I've got that right, Doreen Mora from Kenya, you probably get some really great information about her. And one of the quotes which did make me tickle, she said, God is not done with me yet. she wrote on Twitter, and that did make me tickle. And you've got to think about the inspirational thoughts she had inside. She obviously thought, you know, okay, I've been diagnosed with HIV, but I'm not just going to let it define me, which a lot of us don't, do we? We don't let HIV define us. And she's done this, and it's, she's made an amazing impact in Kenya. Now, if we think about some of the statistics of people living with HIV in Kenya, 1.5 million people are actually living with HIV in Kenya. So that is a lot of people. So, you know, she is doing her bit. You know, she said, you know, I want to keep going on telling all the positive vibes that will inspire generations. And that's what we want to do, don't we? As individuals living with HIV, we want to inspire future generations. And that's why, you know, we talk about this a lot. That's why we do a lot of work within our local communities and our schools and our colleges, sort of preparing, educating, informing the younger generation. So only hopefully through the information perhaps they're getting that perhaps some of us never got. And I know I don't remember receiving any education about HIV. Actually, I even go further, sex education, actually. But perhaps I'm a bit older than some people. But anyway, so I think it's really important. And she's doing this. And, you know, she's got a shining a light for young people in Kenya. As I say, 1.5 million people living with HIV in Kenya. So she is amazing. And as I say, she's, you can catch her on YouTube. She's got a YouTube channel, and she does a lot on Twitter as well. And another quote, which again was really great. She said, I celebrate you and many other brave people who are living with hashtag HIV. You are shooting for the stars. Fire up, girl, one said. So, like we promised, we're going to be looking for those inspirational stories just to keep our minds focused and being positive. So yeah, I think that was a really great story, and I believe Josh is going to be playing an uplifting tune from Shalimar, one of my favorites. Yeah, enjoy. If you've just tuned in, this is the HIVL on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and .com online. Hi, Stuart. How are you?
Hi. I'm good, thanks, Sue. Yeah, how are you?
Not so bad in these lockdown situations.
Oh my goodness.
How have you been doing this last week or so?
Yeah, this last week's actually been quite nice. I did do a spell in isolation for 7 days because I was presenting symptoms.
Oh, right. Okay.
And I had to do the 7-day lockdown, just isolation, just to be on the safe side, you know, so I didn't spread the infection if I had it to other people. I didn't find it too bad. But yeah, I've been out of isolation for 7 days and changing the flat and doing nice things, coming across some stories on the internet and things. That might be of interest to the HIV hour. But about yourself, how's your week been?
Yeah, not too bad, because I recently moved, so I've been doing a bit of decorating and what have you. So that's kept me occupied. But what Josh and I were talking about just before is that, isn't it giving you an opportunity to have some time on your own and really sort of look at yourself and look at the situation and look at people and really sort of make ourselves really quite thankful what's around us? Would you say not?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And also sort of make you think about what's important in life.
Yeah.
You know, how people's, there seem to be, there are, people are changing. And some people seem to be changing for the better, and some people seem to be changing for, well, not the better.
Yeah.
It'd be an interesting thing to see how society kind of forms after this, and what sort of people that we're going to be left with, you know, especially the younger people when they're sort of like children now, how they're going to be when they grow up, how this is going to affect them. But
of course,
yeah, it's an interesting time, isn't it?
I tell you what's been quite nice, because I've been doing the walks, you know, on the beach, and I tell you what's been really nice is just absolute strangers saying good morning, and you saying good morning, and I thought, you know, I don't remember that happening beforehand.
I've noticed it as well. It's really nice. You're sort of like, you're almost thankful to see people that you don't usually talk to much in the street.
No,
but you'll see them now and you think, oh my God, you're okay. Hello. And sort of like, you know, it's
quite
really
nice.
Let's get it back. Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got an interesting story this week, haven't you, Stuart? What's it all about?
Yeah. Well, this is just something I've come across. It's a fairly new story, and it was published on the 22nd of April this year. And it's about, just to tell people what it's about, it's a new treatment in development called LAI, which stands for long-acting injectables. Researchers at Columbia Mailman School of Public Health found that they did a study into women, and they found that the majority of women living with HIV would endorse this new long-acting injectable, or otherwise known as LAI, over current daily pill regimes, which is kind of understandable, really, isn't it, I think? But it's now completed phase 3 of trials, and it's awaiting Food and Drugs Administration's approval. It could be a major game-changer for people who struggle to take tablets every day, you know, if they just go to the hospital once a month, say.
This is happening in the, whereabouts is this sort of a trial happening
this is
again?
This is in Colombia.
Colombia, yeah. Okay,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, so the study participants were recruited from the Women's Interagency HIV Study, which is the largest national study of women living with and at risk of HIV infection. And it sort of found over half of the 59 women interviewed, 56% said that they would choose this long-acting injectable over their current regime, taking tablets every day mainly for reasons of convenience or privacy and sort of perceived effectiveness. And in contrast, just 34% would prefer daily pills and 10% would say they prefer neither. I think I'd probably fall in the 10%, actually. I don't know about you, so.
I mean, why do you think, just thinking back to that that piece of that trial they're doing, why do you think they've sort of targeted women?
You know what? I don't know. It's an interesting one. I mean, in the report, it says that a quarter of women in the US people with HIV in America, a quarter of them are women, and I think this report suggests that the majority of people that will be taking up this new treatment probably would be women. I don't know why. I mean,
makes sense.
It does. And it's sort of, this is the first study to exclusively explore women's interest in this new potential therapy. And one of the first among a non-clinical trial sample who accurately more represents the population who most likely will be using this new treatment. Adherence to antiretroviral therapy is imperative, as we all know, for viral suppression and reducing HIV transmission. But as we also know, that many people with HIV have difficulty in sustaining long-term adherence over their lifespan. I mean, Morgan Philbin, PhD professor of sociomedical sciences at the school, goes on to say that they found that long-acting injectables was a compelling option among the women that they interviewed. So I don't know what you think about that.
Well, I know we've sort of spoken briefly in the past on the HIV Hour about, you know, a possible, I mean, we talk about all new inventions and new things that are happening in this country and around the world. And I think we have sort of touched on about, you know, the trials of an injection. And I think... I think we've sort of asked each other a question. If we had an opportunity, would you, Stuart, would you go for an injection instead of the pills?
Do you know what? I think I probably would. I mean, nowadays I've got my adherence down to like really good. I mean, I never miss tablets now, but in the past it wasn't always like that. I don't know. I think I probably would, unless I was one of these people that miss appointments, you know, and then I wouldn't know what I've done, but I don't know. I had to see what the side effects were, if there were any side effects, or and try and sort of like work out how it would affect my other medications and stuff. But
in
theory, definitely in theory, I think I probably would at least give it a go. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, it would depend. I mean, I'm a bit of a scaredy cat when it comes to injections, actually. Believe it or not. But, I mean, I think a lot of things would have to be taken in consideration. How often would you have that injection?
Because once a month.
It's once a month. Okay, so once a month. Okay.
Yeah.
So are we going to, would we administer that ourselves? Would we have to?
No.
Okay.
Well, you'd have to go to your clinic or your hospital once a month. So that was one of the challenges, actually, that some of the women found. I mean, unfortunately, women living with HIV have always historically been underrepresented. When it comes to HIV treatment research, and actually including this trial, actually, they were underrepresented, funny enough. But it is imperative to understand that the women's interest in this new technology. I mean, the story goes on to say that while the majority of the women in the Columbia University-led study would also prefer this new treatment over taking tablets regularly, there were some significant challenges that were raised, which include more frequent visits to the doctor, for example, opposed to like every 3 to 4 months is what we're used to nowadays, and also transport issues, the cost of getting to the doctor every month, and then there's the distrust of new perceived untested technologies as well, which
I'm just thinking, if we sort of come back into the UK, my thoughts also would be to, you know, would there have to be extra resources to, if we're saying we'll have to go to our consultant or nurse or HIV nurse, whatever, now once a month, what sort of pull on the resources is that going to be? Because, I mean, at the moment, we go every 6 months, don't we, for our checkups, for our blood. So I would be quite curious to find out, I think a lot of things are going to have to be weighed up.
It could be an interesting thing, couldn't it? I mean, the study did demonstrate that women living with HIV are sort of more open to this new potential treatment of being injected once a month. And actually, many people do believe it will provide distinct benefits over daily pills. However, women also describe challenges unique to them, which need to be addressed, in order to ensure that they fully benefit from these new technologies, including the role of children and childbearing, caregiving responsibilities. Then there's the long-term medical mistrust, but as a result, they want to highlight the need to incorporate women into this process of LAI, antiretroviral therapy rollout, to ensure that their inclusion is paramount, it could be interesting to see how it goes on, really, because it's a fairly new thing, isn't it? You come across it before?
Yeah, I mean, you know me, Stuart, anything that involves more women in clinical trials, I've spoken about it before. We all seem to be being more involved now, and quite rightly so.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, and if you think about it, in the UK, just under half of people living with HIV in the UK are women. So I'm glad we're coming to the forefront a bit more, because we need to be.
Me too.
But that's interesting. And we've got to look at stories like that as being positive, because all new things going ahead with HIV medication, ways on how we take our medication. It's going to be, someone will want to take the pills, someone will want to do the injection. So, it'll be no doubt we'll be talking about it
furthermore
in the future, don't you think?
Yeah, we'll see if it gets the approval from the Food and Drugs Administration.
Yeah, so let's hope so.
So we've got a bit of community news. Ollie Spleen, who's been on the show a couple of times, he's got a new album out called Night Sweats and Fever Dreams. Now, Ollie was diagnosed in 1999 with HIV. Unfortunately, he was hospitalised with AIDS-defining complications in the summer of 2000. But 20 years on from his diagnosis, Ollie is working with people and creating music. His latest work is working with Nick Hudson, and they've created this album called Night Sweats and Fever Dreams. He says it's a fevered and osteogenic mirror to the desperate times when the threat of death at the hands of AIDS was a terrifying reality for many gay men. So with Night Sweats and Fever Dreams, Ollie has once again produced a touching, tender and highly personal album. Alongside his collaborator, Nick Hudson, he has concocted a heady mix of songs, some new, the others radical reworkings of material written over the past 20 years. There's some dark and mysterious and wonderfully atmospheric tracks. His fractured vocals are beautifully complemented by Nick Hudson's lush arrangements. So we're going to play one of his tracks, actually, in a short while, called The Bedroom. And the album is on general release on June the 1st. Ollie's also raised some money for the Terence Higgins Trust, which is amazing, which is brilliant. £325 for a single release, which was in 2019. So all that those funds go to the Terence Higgins Trust, which is always an amazing thing to do. And Ollie just wanted everyone to know that he's actually doing very well now and currently living in quarantine in a shed somewhere in Hastings. So that's good news. His condition is no longer life-threatening and he has an undetectable viral load, and that's been for over 16 years. He said the album is dedicated to those who didn't survive. And so here, let's have a listen. Here's The Bedroom by Ollie Spleen. So we've got a little bit more community news. This is about Lunch Positive. As you probably know, well aware that they can't do their weekly lunch club, which was every Friday. They're still offering things, so their mission is for community, food, friendship and peer support. Even in these unusual times, they aim to continue providing all these things to people with HIV as very best they can. They want you to stay in touch with each other and with them. They've put together a range of new ways to help people stay connected with them and to find and share support. So this includes a private Facebook group, members WhatsApp group, online live chat, there's a newsletter, phone-ins for a one-to-one talk and updates, and email. So if you want to stay in touch and find out more, please tell us. There's a contact form on their website, which is lunchpositive.org. You can just fill that in and they'll get back to you. There's also help with additional food support. They provide additional cooked food that can be collected from them or doorstep dropped at your home. Depending on your individual circumstances, health, level of risk and social contact, they can help you access the food in the best way. If you'd like to know more, again, just get in touch using the contact form on the website. And you can join them as a member if you're not already. They're here for all people with HIV in Brighton and Hove and the surrounding areas. They remain open for people to join as new members to access support and services. So if you'd like to join at any time through a self-referral, again, just use the contact form on their website, which is lunchpositive.org. The site is receiving a lot of traffic at the moment, they want to say, and if you're not redirected to a page which acknowledges safe receipt of your form, please try again, or you can email them delivery@lunchpositive.org. You can email them info@lunchpositive.org. So do get in touch. So that's the end of another show. Thank you for tuning in tonight. We wish you well, and we will catch you next week. All the best. Lots of love. Bye.